Good afternoon, everybody. It's nice to see some people didn't cut out for the day and that you made it here. So thank you for being here. So my presentation, you heard the title, A New Model for Making Informed Adaptations to Evidence-Based Interventions, which I will refer to as EBIs, our Evidence-Based Programs. And I'm with ETR Associates, and I want to thank my coworkers for helping with this project. Lori Berlari is not with ETR Associates anymore, but the rest of us still are there. And the Division of CDC's Division of Reproductive Health funded this project. So we want to thank them, and especially Dr. Talaria Fuller for her support. We worked very closely on it. And so we're in the field of sexual and reproductive health, and so the EBIs we're talking about are related to sexual risk-taking behavior, reducing sexual risk-taking behavior for youth. But I think this model could be used for different kinds of evidence-based programs in all different content areas. So, and I have no disclosures to make. Anything I show is completely free online today. I mean, it always is. So what I'm going to cover in 14 minutes is why we created a new model, because there's other adaptation guidance information out there. What our model is a five-step process for developing adaptation guidance, either to one's own evidence-based intervention or to somebody else as a developer you might be working with, key factors for the development, and also some resources that can be used. So adaptation guidance, anytime you have an evidence-based intervention, and I'll just name a couple, like making proud choices, reducing the risk, these are safer choices. They're programs that can be used with youth in school, BART, becoming a responsible teens for out-of-school youth. And so these are all the kind of programs we were working with. So once they've been developed and evaluated and called evidence-based, then there's this question in the field of how much can I change and how much I have to change something to make it work for my population, but what can't I change? Because I want to make sure it works. We want the same student outcomes. So basically, folks were wanting input on how do they make adaptations, changes, deletions, modifications, additions, and so that's what this project was about, is giving them guidance and a new model for guidance. And the puppies, just to stand for fidelity. And because every slide presentation should have a puppy. And this is just a silly way to show that we do in our workshops sometime. If your program is a nice, warm bowl of chili, and folks are like, well, I want to make the chili, but for my community, we can't do kidney beans, we have to do the white beans, and we don't like tomato sauce, we can't digest it well, so we like to use the more of a chicken broth. And then, you know, after so many changes happen, it's not chili anymore, it's bean soup, which is cool. Bean soup is good, but if you're going for the effect of chili, then you have to make sure you don't go too far. So first we looked at other adaptation models. And there were many really good ones. And they really, most of them focused on, like, the common themes between them were that core components or the key elements of effective programs were really critical. So that had to be part of any kind of adaptation process, considering those. And also, they all had to do with finding the right program, the fit. The rightness of fit was really important. But they didn't give a lot of nuts and bolts for specific programs. They were just kind of generally, when you adapt, consider this and consider that. And we were working with, and before I joined as the director of the project, we were working with quite a large group advisory committee of researchers and practitioners in the field. We got a lot of input, and they're like, we want something more specific, more specific, more specific. So we said, okay. So the model that we created was built on the literature, the wisdom in the literature. We decided it needed to be intervention specific, not just generally. We do have some general guidance that we came up with after doing a whole bunch of specific guidance. So, and I have some left over from another presentation up here. But basically, we wanted to give things that are super, super hands-on, nuts and bolts, someone could just run with right away. And then it needed to work for educators, who is what I mean, practitioners, but also for program evaluators and program planners, because adaptations to program, really when they're done well, they involve all the disciplines involved in that implementation. So basically our model had these five stages, and after going through each of these steps, we developed adaptation kit, we call a toolkit, and I have some examples, and they're free online if you know anyone leading these curricula or these EBIs. And so, and I'll go through each one of these, but they each built on each other. And the first one was just kind of something we did as we kind of dissected the intervention, and that served to help us develop the logic model, that served to help us decide what the core components were. So they all built sequentially. And the last four, the activity determinant matrix didn't make it in the kit. It's just way too much specific information. It could make someone's head explode. And so really we just, 2 through 5 are included in the kits, but the matrix isn't. So I'll go through each of them briefly. So the activity determinant matrix, basically this was the most time-consuming. It's basically taking the intervention, going through it activity by activity, step by step, and mapping out exactly what determinants did this activity try to affect, what learning strategies were used. Was it role play? Was it role play using observers? Was it dealing with, you know, was how much time was it in discussion? So it looked at all the determinants, all the pedagogy used, and the amount of time for each, and made a real serious matrix of everything that's in there. And then that helped us build the logic model. And so the tips for this are log everything. You have multiple people do it because it's a lot of work and there's a lot of judgment calls, but as long as there's internal consistency, that's fine. You just have to kind of go one way or other in some of the things. So then comes the logic model, and probably a lot of people have familiarity with developing logic models or using logic models, but we use the BDI logic model, which was developed by someone who works for us, Dr. Doug Kirby. And BDI is behavior determinant intervention. And so any logic model would be fine, but this really maps with the activity, intervention activity, all the way through what determinants or risk and protective factors it does influence, what health behaviors it influences, and what the health goals are. So it really creates a nice map. Why does this intervention work? Oh, because this activity specifically, you know, addresses these things which build on this. So it's just a really nice map of the causal relationships. And so some people hate logic models and some people love logic models, but we find it's really important to put it in as a tool, because when someone's making an adaptation, some are easy, like our green light adaptations are go, do it, that's great, do it. And the red lights are don't do it, just don't even think about it. The yellow lights are tough. It's like, how do we take this activity? We don't want to use a role play format. We don't want to use this video. We want a different one. We want to move from a school setting to a community setting, or, you know, like bigger changes. Then they can go back to the logic model and say, okay, if I'm making a switch, am I really making sure all these determinants are handled? Are we using the right pedagogy? So the logic model is really helpful for those who aren't afraid of it. And so development tips is use the logic model that works for you. Work closely with the EBI developer. I mean, I should have said that from the very beginning. You have to work really closely with the developer of the intervention, because they know why it works. They know why they did it the way they did it. And they're usually involved in the research too. So definitely work with the developer. And it should be specific down to the activity level, because if you want it to be really useful, the more specific it is, the better. So then next comes the core components. Are people familiar with core components? Have you heard that? So, or else they're called key elements, and they're the defining characteristics of a program. It's what makes the program the program. It's what makes it work. And so that's what we base our definition of fidelity on, is that if someone's implementing the curriculum or the EBI consistent with the core components, then we say you can consider that good fidelity. So if there's one tool in any of the kits that I think are most useful, it's the core components. And so it's critical, and it helps with EBI select. They help with EBI selection. They help with the yellow light adaptations. And the development tips are, we really like the 3 categories that we came up with on core components, and I'll show you those in a minute: content, pedagogical, and implementation. Next, nothing is too basic, spell it out. I mean, it's really funny because people will be like, well, I know this curriculum is for 5 to 8-year-olds, but can we use it with 75 to 90-year-olds? I mean, it's amazing. It's like, if this works, I want to use my population. and they really are willing to stretch really far. So the more specific the core components are, the better, and definitely pressure test it with educators. Like, what does this mean to you? So, and make sure you get as much as specific as possible. So a little more on our three categories of core components is the content is the what. What do you want the youth or your participants to walk away with? It can be knowledge, attitudes, a perception of a social norm, a skill. That's the what. The pedagogy is how it's taught, you know, whether it's role play, small group work, a reflection activity. And implementation is logistics, like how many students to a room, whether it's in a school setting or a community setting, those kind of things. So then we did the green, yellow, red light adaptations, and the folks in the field really like these, and this was very specific. Like I just mentioned, green is these are good changes, make them, like it's updating statistics, changing the names in the role plays to make it more suitable for the population, adding local myths, our community myths to myth and fact activities, that sort of thing. Red light would be things like what they usually want to do with our programs because they're long, is we want to cut 5 of the 16 lessons, that sort of thing. That's a red light. You can't do that. And then yellow light, there's a whole lot of things fall into yellow light. It could be changing activities, changing settings. I have a whole list, if you want more, whole list of yellow light adaptations. And the tips are get as much information from the field and all the challenges you can find. Pay special attention to the yellow lights because there's so many and they're the hardest to make. And if you, like with our funding, CDC didn't want us to have a website. They wanted everything printed and approved, and it took a long time. I cracked up this. We set a new model. This project started in 2006, but we finally got everything through clearance. But if you can put the information online, so then as a new challenge comes up, or the developers change their mind sometime and say, I think this is a new core component, or I'm going to expand this core component. So if you can put it online and keep it updated, that's even more useful. I'm going to kind of skip fidelity and adaptation monitoring logs. The important thing about this is the more useful the educators perceive them to be, the more likely they will be used, and then everyone can benefit from them, the evaluators, the program planners. But the educators have to feel like it's good information for them. And it is. It is good information, but it takes a discipline to fill them out. So those are the 5 stages, and as I mentioned, the activity matrix doesn't make it into the final kit. These are all the important people I wanted to thank for being part of the project. And just I wanted to mention, we do have these 6 kits, adaptation kits, available on these 6 programs, and they're free online. And then we have a whole bunch of other resources around developing and using adaptation guidelines. Like what we did after we developed all the adaptation kits is we looked at across the board, because we know these are specific. There's so many programs out there. I looked across the board. What did all the, from these 6 programs, what were all the green lights and what were the similarities? What were all the yellow lights and the similarities? And then we came up, that's what this is. This is a general adaptation guidance. So if you're doing something in sexual health and you don't, there's not specific guidance, those are general guidelines you can use. And so there's more there. And we do have an article pending publication that's been in the works for about 6 years. So hopefully that will be out soon too. So I think that's my time. So, thank you. I'm allowed to answer 2 questions if anyone has a question. Yes. So like the way we pressure test it is that when we're doing a training to one of these curriculum, we'll bring the core components or with people who know the curriculum and say, these are the core components, what do you think? And they'll say, oh, you didn't say anything about how many kids could be in each group. Like basically just make sure you didn't forget anything important. And make sure they understand what you mean. It's just making sure everyone has a, you know, you have all the important stuff in there. Any other questions? Thank you.